Well, bless, good morning to all of you. I'm going to give you a big part of the lecture, not all of the lecture this morning, just to kind of do one final run through, but also to give you the same lesson because it's such a valuable lesson. This year's theme of the lectures is the miracles of Jesus, and each day they're going to be looking at certain miracles that reflect a certain character or a certain part of Jesus, Jesus the Redeemer, Jesus the King, and so forth. And on my particular day, it's Jesus as the King, miracles that reveal Him or show His kingly quality. And I've been assigned probably one of the most unpopular subjects is that Jesus is a king, and as a king, He has to judge. And so I have Jesus the King, the judge of the nation. And the miracle that I've been given is in Mark chapter 11, if you want to begin turning there in Mark chapter 11. And we're going to use that as our text this morning. But it's the miracle of Jesus and the cursing and the withering of the fig tree. And so when I first was assigned this, I was thinking to myself, the miracle of the cursing and the withering of the fig tree. First thing I was thinking, of all the miracles of Jesus, if you had someone list out all the miracles of Jesus, would this even make the list? It's one of those miracles that Jesus does the last week of His life on His way to the cross. And a lot of times people just kind of read right through it and don't give a whole lot of significance to it. Secondly, I thought to myself, figs. I don't know a whole lot about figs or fig trees. I didn't grow up with figs being a big part of my diet or any part of my diet. In all honesty, I was that generation that grew up on cheeseburger, fries, and chocolate shakes. But I remember one particular time as a young boy heading out of state. I think it was like on I-15 heading out. And there was this big billboard. And it says, coming up, world's famous date/fig shakes. And I was thinking to myself, why would you ruin something like a shake by putting figs in it? I think probably the closest I've come to figs was eating a Fig Newton. But I liked it, so maybe I would like figs. Harold probably is the opposite. Harold probably has eaten lots of figs and knows all about them. But I knew when I was assigned this, I was going to have to study more about figs and fig trees than I ever wanted to. But in the end, I was glad that I did, because there was things about this miracle and this story of Jesus, and even figs, that I never realized before that this came to life for me. And I want to take that and make it come to life for you as well. Figs in our own country are simply grown in just a few states, California, Texas, Utah, Oregon, and Washington. And even in that, there's not a big call for people to eat figs in our world today, in our country. They're not a big part of our diet. But I want to tell you, that was not the case when it came to the people of Palestine, the people of the Bible. Figs were a major part of ancient life and a stable food source. And I think that figs were looked at as a very sweet type of fruit, like grapes. Figs and vines, grapevines, are mentioned almost hand in hand so often in the Old Testament. Look for that in our lesson this morning. Figs and fig trees are mentioned some 60 times in the Bible. In fact, Everett Ferguson, in his book about Palestine, says the olive, the vine, grain, and sheep were the basis of the agricultural economy of the Mediterranean world. Now, you'll notice I didn't mention figs in that. But with all my study of figs and how often they're mentioned with vines, I have to think that figs were a close second to all of those things. They were one of the most important plants for the Israelites, being grown throughout Palestine and especially the mountainous regions of Palestine. Now, what I want to do in this lesson is I want to engage you in this lesson by asking you at various times certain questions. And the first question I want to tell you about, actually I forgot to put this up there. Real quick, if you're interested in seeing any of the lectures, they're going to be streamed on livestream.com. So all you have to do is put in livestream.com, and then once you're there, put in Florida College Lectures 2019. So you can actually see all the lessons on your computer if you wanted to. So I wanted to ask you this. Do figs jump off the pages of the Bible for you? Because I want to tell you, they didn't for me. In fact, I didn't really notice all these figs, but as I began this study, all of a sudden, I started noticing figs I've never noticed before. For example, Adam and Eve. We know that after their sin, what do they? They cover themselves with leaves, right? But did you remember it was fig leaves? Genesis 3, verse 7. The 12 spies in Numbers 13, verse 23, brought back large clusters of fruit from the promised land to show the people it is what God says. And among that is a cluster of figs. They brought a cluster of figs from the promised land to show the people. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 8, the land of Canaan is described not only as a milk flowing land flowing with milk and honey, but it is a great land because it is a land of fig trees. Do you remember when Hezekiah obtained a deadly sickness and prayed to God that his life be spared, and God gave him an extra 15 years? Well, Hezekiah became well. He was healed of that deadly disease, obviously by the will and power of God. But according to 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 7, he recovered by eating a cake of figs. Did you remember that? And who can forget Amos's humble declaration? I am not a prophet, nor am I a son of a prophet, for I am a herdsman and a grower of sycamore figs. Amos 7, verse 14. In the New Testament, remember Nathanael was so impressed with Jesus. In fact, he concluded that Jesus was the Messiah because Jesus had saw him the day before under a tree. That was a fig tree. Did you remember that? John 1, verse 48. James, in James 3, verse 12, uses a fig tree that produces not figs, but olives to discuss the problem of a tongue that both blesses and curses. In Revelation 6, verse 13, John witnessed a fig tree casting unripe figs as it was shaken by a great wind. These are just a few of the many references to figs and fig trees in the Bible. Some of them that I had completely forgotten that that was a fig tree or figs that were involved. But let's talk about the story itself. Mark chapter 11, if you would, if you haven't done so. Mark chapter 11, we're going to begin in verse 11. Now, this particular miracle done in the last week of Jesus' life is recorded by Matthew and Mark. We're going to use Mark's account. Now, they basically are the same in detail. The big difference is that Matthew records the cursing of the fig tree and the withering of the tree as one event, as if they happened the same time, the same event. Mark is a little more specific and accurate, where he says the cursing of the fig tree took place on one day, and the recognition of the withered tree by the disciples took place on the next day. And I think it's important in our study and understanding the significance of this fig tree and this miracle of Jesus by placing it in the chronological order of what happened, recorded by Mark in that last week of Jesus' life. And so we start with the Sunday And what happens on day number one, Sunday? It's the triumphant entry. And Mark says at the end of that triumphant entry, that's all Jesus did. Mark 11, verse 11, Jesus entered Jerusalem and came to the temple. And after looking around at everything, he left for Bethany with the 12, since it was already late. And so you have Jesus in this triumphant entry, and then he goes to Bethany. He leaves the town, he goes to Bethany, and you have day number two, Monday. Well, that's where Jesus curses the fig tree. Let's look at verse 12. And on the next day, when they had left Bethany, he became hungry. And seeing at a distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if perhaps he would find anything on it. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. And he said to it, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." Jesus cursed it. But notice Mark makes it very clear, and his disciples were listening. And so Jesus curses this fig tree, for it wasn't doing the very thing it was supposed to do. And so, according to verse 15, then he goes into Jerusalem, and what happens on this particular day is Mark records him cleansing the temple or driving out the money changers. Including verse 16, he would not permit anyone carrying merchandise through the temple. And that's all that Mark records Jesus doing on that second day, that Monday. You'll notice in verse 19, and when evening came, they would go out of the city. And apparently, on that particular Monday night, they went back to Bethany. And so now we have day number three, Tuesday. And in verse 20, it says, "And as they were passing by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots up." We could spend some time talking about what that all means, from the roots up, but let's continue on. Verse 21, "And being reminded, Peter said to him, 'Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered.' And then Jesus answering, now that they've recognized the tree that was alive and now is dead, Jesus brings some lessons out. Verse 22, "And Jesus answered, saying to them, 'Have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and cast in the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes what he says is going to happen, it will be granted to him. And therefore I say to you, all things for which you pray and ask, believe that you have received them, and they will be granted you. And whenever you stand praying, forgive. And if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father who is in heaven will also forgive you your transgressions. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father who is in heaven forgive your transgressions." And then verse 27, they go back into Jerusalem on this Tuesday. And this is where Jesus is asked, "By what authority are you doing these things?" That's the context that I want to look at in regards to this miracle of Jesus. Now, you'll notice that the lessons that Jesus brings out, verse 22, faith. But what kind of faith? Faith that moves mountains. Verse 24, prayer. But what kind of prayer? Confident prayer. And verse 25, merciful forgiveness. As you have received from the Father, so you forgive others. Now, in this particular lecture, I write about that in the book. But I'm not taking the time to look at those lessons. But I do want to say this, that oftentimes we look at those lessons about faith that moves mountains and confident prayer and merciful forgiveness, and they're great lessons, but sometimes we don't put them in their context. And when you put them in the context of this miracle, to me, they just leap off the pages of the Bible and have such more, much more power and significance for us. So here's the whole premise of what I want to cover in this lesson. It's not the one that Jesus brings out clearly. It's not like these lessons that he talks about. But I believe that they got the message loud and clear. I believe that Jesus curses the fig tree and it withers, it dies, and it's all part of Jesus' plan, not because he's hungry and it has no fruit and he's upset and his anger gets the best of him. Like everything Jesus did, there's a purpose, there's a lesson, there's a message. And what Jesus was saying is that this tree represents Israel and how God sees them. And because God sees them as a fruitless tree, God's going to bring judgment. God's going to curse them. And of course, on that, on his mind, that judgment that's coming in AD 70, when the Romans will come and destroy Jerusalem and burn it with fire and tear down the temple to where one stone will not be left upon another. A judgment that is a mere some 40 years away. And that's what I'm going to bring out to you in this lesson, is why or how we understand that that's what this tree represents. But when you understand that context, that this is the judgment of a fruitless nation, that it is going to be judged for the very things that it has become fruitless, and it's going to be judged because of what's going to happen this very week, the killing of the Son of God. You can't kill the Son of God and just get away with it. And when you understand that, and all the things are going to happen up to that point, and in fact that some of these disciples are going to be there to witness the destruction of Jerusalem, you can understand why Jesus talks about faith that moves mountains and prayer that is confident and forgiveness that is merciful. Those are going to be all needed by his disciples, especially his apostles, because of what's coming upon them all the way up to that destruction, that judgment. It is not going to be easy. Do you remember when Jesus said, I told you not to take a garment and not to take a bag, but now take all of those things, including a sword? Because things are changing now. A fruitless tree is still going to have its way until that judgment comes. And so when you understand the context, I believe faith and prayer and forgiveness makes all sorts of sense of why Jesus gives those. But let's talk about the lesson, the message that isn't so clear, that isn't actually stated here in so many words. The next question I want to ask you is, why do you think, to bring this message out, Jesus used a fig tree? Why a fig tree? I mean, we've already talked about how we just kind of miss out figs and fig trees. They don't pop off the pages of the Bible. And even here, for a long time, I didn't really understand the significance of this miracle myself. Just read past it. You probably were the same way. It seems so subtle of a miracle and even more a subtle of a message. But I want to tell you, what might seem so subtle to us in this day and in this age would not be for the Jews of that day. This is a language, this is a metaphor that comes right out of the Old Testament, especially the prophets. The prophets had to deliver God's message, and one of the key messages is judgment is coming. And in describing that coming judgment, describing what it's going to be like, they use this very same metaphor. In fact, the one that uses it the most is Jeremiah. Now, how appropriate is that? Because Jeremiah is Judah's last hope. He is the last prophet that prophesies to them, that warns them of this coming judgment, all the way to it comes. In fact, as Jerusalem is being destroyed by the Babylonians and the flames and the smoke is rising from Jerusalem, Jeremiah is there to see all of it. Just like some of these disciples will be. And I believe that Jesus, using this warning of the fig tree, is twofold. On this particular event, it's only his disciples that hear this. Remember, Mark says, and his disciples were listening to this. On one hand, Jesus is warning the disciples that they would be prepared for the before and then actually when it happens. That they would be prepared so that they would not be taken and affected by this. But on another account, Jesus is warning the people of this coming judgment. The king is coming to judge because he wants them to know why it is coming. Now, there is still hope for them. Even though they're going to kill the Son of God, there is still hope to escape this judgment. But here's the ironic twist. The hope that remains for them to escape judgment comes from the very one that they're going to put to death on Friday. He is the one that can save them from the judgment that is to come. Let's take a look at some of these examples in Isaiah 34. Isaiah is told to give a message. Hold your place in Mark 11. Go over to Isaiah 34. He is told to give a message about God coming to judge the nations. So this doesn't particularly have a meaning for Jerusalem and Judah, but it shows us this message of judgment, and this metaphor wasn't just for them. God used it to other nations. For he is not just the God of one nation. He's not just the judge of one nation. And so look at Isaiah 34 verse 2, where God through Isaiah describes or declares, "For the Lord's indignation is against all the nations, and his wrath is against all their armies. He has utterly destroyed them. He has given them over to slaughter." And so he starts talking about this judgment, this slaughter. Look, if you would, at verse 4. This is what it's going to look like. This is what's going to happen. "And all the host of heaven will wear away, and the sky will be rolled up like a scroll." When Jesus talks about the destruction of Jerusalem, Matthew 24, he talks about all these things are going to happen, the sky and the stars and the sun and the moon. That's just right out of Old Testament judgment language. You see it right here. The sky will be rolled up like a scroll. Continuing, "And all their hosts will wither away as a leaf withers from the vine, or as one withers from the fig tree." Notice both the vine and the fig tree are mentioned together. They both wither. They both are destroyed. Let's look at Jeremiah and some of the examples he uses. Jeremiah chapter 5 and in verse 17. Jeremiah 5, verse 17. Now, why is this judgment coming? Well, look at Jeremiah 5, verse 1. "Roam to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. And look now and take note and seek in her open squares if you can find a man, if there is one who does justice, who seeks truth, then I will pardon her." It's almost like Abraham bargaining with God for Sodom and Gomorrah. If you can find 10 righteous, God doesn't even say that. He says, if I can find one righteous, justice, truth seeker. And he doesn't even find that. And so, he's going to bring a nation. Verse 15. Behold, I'm bringing a nation against you from afar, O house of Israel, declares the Lord. It is an enduring nation. It's an ancient nation. A nation whose language you do not know. Nor can you understand what they say. And then in verse 17, what are they going to do? They will devour your harvest and your food. They will devour your sons and your daughters. They will devour your flocks and your herds. They will devour your vines and your fig trees. Again, the vine and the fig trees are mentioned together. They are devoured. They are destroyed. Let's look at Jeremiah chapter 8 and verse 13. Jeremiah chapter 8. Again, judgment is coming again. In verse 1, why? Who's the guilty ones? Who do we blame? Well, look what he says in verse 1. At that time, declares the Lord, they will bring out the bones of the kings of Judah and the bones of its princes and the bones of the priests and the bones of the prophets and the bones of the inhabitants of Jerusalem from their graves. Everyone's guilty. From the king to the priest to the prophet to the common man. In verse 12, he describes how bad it was. He says, were they ashamed because of the abominations that they have done? They certainly were not ashamed. They didn't know how to blush. Therefore, they shall fall among those who fall. At that time of their punishment, they shall be brought down, says the Lord. I'm going to judge them, says the Lord. They wouldn't even blush. They weren't even embarrassed at all the things that they were doing. And so, verse 13, I will surely snatch them away, declares the Lord. There will be no grapes on the vine, and no figs on the fig tree. The leaf will wither, and what I have given them will pass away. There's a lot more of these we can look at, but for sake of time, we're going to move on. But I want to tell you that there's some interesting things here. Number one, when you look at the prophets of the captivity, Ezekiel, Daniel, there is no mention of figs in those books. Now that could just be that they didn't come up in the message, but it could be that God is declaring, see, this is exactly what I was saying. You don't get to enjoy the vine and the grapes. You don't get to enjoy the sweet nectar of the fig from the fig tree. It happened just as he said. But you know what? The prophets don't just use the fig tree and the vine as a metaphor, as a message, as a description of judgment. They also use it to talk about that the fig tree will bear fruit again. It will come to life. God will restore these blessings to you. And you will once again be restored to your rightful place. And so the vine and the fig tree are used for both judgment and for restoration. You see, over and over, this is the metaphor that's used. And these Jewish people of Palestine, they would have understood this message. They would have understood what Jesus was doing. If the apostles didn't get it on that particular day, they soon would. What was subtle for us would not be so subtle for them. So my third question to you is this. What was Jesus thinking? What was on Jesus' mind as he does this miracle, as he lives this last week before the cross? You see, brothers in Christ, I really believe that to understand the cursing of the fig tree and its meaning, it has to be studied in the context of Jesus' final week. And this was another area of the study that just really came to life for me that I really didn't see before. What is on Jesus' mind? Well, what is on his mind is this very thing, judgment. The destruction of Jerusalem. Telling the people it's coming. Warning his disciples to be prepared. Let me give you some examples of this. And in fact, I want to read these because I want you to hear the words of Jesus as he talks about this, as it is on his mind. The triumphant entry, it's on his mind. Luke chapter 19, verse 42. As Jesus enters Jerusalem, Mark says he looks around and he leaves, but Luke tells us he says these words as he looks over Jerusalem. If you had known in this day, even you, the things which make for peace, but now they have been hidden from your eyes. For the day shall come upon you when your enemies will throw up a bank before you and will surround you and will hem you in on every side. And they will level you to the ground and your children within you. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation. I always thought that the one stone left upon another was later, Matthew 24. But actually he says those very words after triumphantly entering Jerusalem. Later on in the week, Matthew 23, Jesus just lets the Pharisees and the scribes have it. He calls them what? Hypocrites. He describes all their hypocrisy in the midst of that discussion. In Matthew 23, 37 through 39 are these words. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. Behold, your house is being left to you desolate. For I say to you, from now on, you shall not see me until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. I want you to notice, it's not just on Jesus' mind. But Jesus is not a king that says, you're going to get what you deserve. Did you notice? It's words of love and mercy and care. How I wanted to gather you like a mother hen gathers her chicks. But here's the problem. You weren't having any of it. You didn't want me to do that for you. We remember Matthew 24 where Jesus is actually talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. And what's going to happen before it? In Matthew 24, verse 15, he uses the words of Daniel. The abomination of desolation is coming upon you, city. But Luke, in his account of this, Luke 21, verse 20, describes the actual abomination, the actual events. But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is at hand. The abomination of desolation was when Rome surrounded Jerusalem and then destroyed it. Back in Matthew 24, verse 32 and 33, among Jesus' words about the destruction, about the judgment, he makes a parable. Notice what the parable is, verse 32. Now learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branches has already become tender and put forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. Even so, you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. The signs of it and its arrival are given in a parable of the fig tree. Then we have, what about this? On the way to the cross, surely as Jesus is on his way to the cross, he's just thinking about what he has to go through, right? No. Luke 23, 28 through 31. On the way to the cross, this is on Jesus' mind. On the way to the cross, he sees some women who are weeping and mourning for what is happening to him. And he stops and he turns to them and he says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things in the green tree, what will happen in the dry?" Notice the language again. If they do these things in the green tree, the tree while it's alive, what will happen when it is dry, when it is withered, when it is dead? So, looking at Jesus' words, you can see judgment. Destruction of Jerusalem was on his mind, but it's not just in his words. It's also in his actions. This miracle of the withering of the fig tree is what we call in the Old Testament a sign act. It is where a prophet was doing something visual that demonstrated the message he was giving. For example, you might remember that Jeremiah 13, was told to take a girdle and to take this girdle to the Euphrates River and to stick it in a rock, behind a rock, and to leave it there. And then he was told to go and get it, and as he got it, he found it was ruined. It was destroyed. It was good for nothing. And he took this back to Jerusalem, and he delivered the message that basically, this is the way God sees you. You are a ruined girdle. Ezekiel, in Ezekiel chapter 4, was told to lay on a certain side one day after another for 390 days. And no doubt, as he laid on his side and people passed by and said, "What is this foolish man doing?" he would speak to them. And at the end of 390 days, he turned on to his right side and laid down for another 40 days. All as a sign of the message to the people from God. And I believe Jesus does two sign acts, at least two sign acts. One of them we're talking about right here. The cursing and the withering of the fig tree. It's a perfect visual of how God sees Israel and what he's going to do about it. But I think as well, when Jesus drives out the money changers is another sign act that judgment is coming, and why. And isn't it interesting that this event, the driving of the money changers, takes place right in the middle of the cursing and the withering. In fact, there are many people who don't believe that the cleansing of the temple is a cleansing at all, but believe that it is a cursing. That in other words, the one that he did at the beginning of his ministry was a warning, a cursing, a clean your act up. But here at the end, it's not a cleansing, it's a cursing. It's a saying that it is too late. Jesus was not coming to put the temple back into proper function, but instead was giving a visual that it was too late. And that it would be only a short time that this temple would be destroyed because they had made it into a robber's den. And so clearly, the miracle of the fig tree is just one small part of a message that Jesus both spoke and acted out on the final week of his life as he was on his way to the cross. And so the final question I have for you as we bring our lesson to a close is, what does this miracle mean for us? Well, today we talk about Jesus as a king. And a beloved king is a king that what? Will judge his people in honesty, bringing justice and fairness. A beloved king is a king that teaches his people and warns his people, even when the message of truth is difficult to hear. Jesus is that type of king. He's a king that says, I must judge because things are crooked that need to be straightened. Things have been done that need to be made right. But Jesus is a king that shows his love by warning the people before it comes, by becoming the very source of hope that they can escape the judgment and flee to safety. And so what I ask you is, the next time you see a tree, it doesn't have to be a fig tree, but the next time that you see a tree, especially one that is withered, that's not producing fruit anymore, I want you to remember this miracle. I want you to remember what was on Jesus' mind this last week of his life. I want you to think that he cursed the fig tree because the fig tree had one purpose and it wasn't even doing that. You see, brother, sister, Christ, we have one purpose, and that is to bear fruit for our Savior. If we think that it's going to be any different for us, if we get caught up and distracted by all the different activities in this world, all the different purposes Satan wants us to have, we'll be just like Israel, a fruitless tree. I want you to remember this miracle and all that was on Jesus' mind. I want you to remember his message, because for us, we know that Jesus, for us, is not just the judge of the nation. He's the judge of the world. There's a judgment that is yet to come, but the message is the same. It's coming, but there's hope. And that hope is the crucified Jesus Christ, who was resurrected on the third day, who will be the first fruits, who gives us the evidence that one day, when that judgment comes, we'll be able to escape and enter into the joys of heaven. If there's one that needs to prepare their heart and to prepare their life for that particular day, where they will meet the King and the judge. If we can help you in any way, won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing.
Glory free, and glory free.